From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio, focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Radio Hour. We're pleased to welcome in Blake Young, the President and CEO of Sacramento Food Bank and Family Services. Blake, good day to you.
Good day to you, Bob. Thank you. Yeah, it's a great day.
It's a great day. Spring has sprung. Can we freeze this somehow? Can we just kind of, I love getting up in the morning and you got to put a sweatshirt on and it's kind of chilly. And then by afternoon, it's like, man, it's God's country.
It's perfect. And then we just go right into scorching.
I know. What's the deal? Is there some place on earth?
I would love for it to be cooler. Yeah. I'd love for it to be 70, 75, 80. But that's just not where we live, is it?
It sure isn't. But I guess that's why all these great crops grow.
That's right.
You know, some of these, I mean, they grow so fast. I forget corn. I mean, you can go by a cornfield. I've gone by a cornfield driving from Davis to Woodland, and on my way home, it's grown a foot.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah. So our now, you know, things are opening up. Most people receive their stimulus checks. School districts are receiving a fair amount of money. Local municipalities are receiving a fair amount of money from the federal government to get open, to get running again. Is that affecting you folks there?
Well, I mean, there's a bright side to people getting some relief. The issue for us really is that there's been so many people that, A, were freshly unemployed during the coronavirus and are going to take them probably north of a year to recover.
Yep.
We'll get to that in a minute. And then, you know, the school districts are slowly starting to open, but the families of the children going there, again, are still struggling tremendously. And we as an organization are just trying to figure out, and we're kind of throwing darts at a dartboard, you know, what does this look like for the next couple of years? We feel strongly from the analysis that we've done, feedback we've gotten from other food banks in the nation, some national nonprofits really looking at this, that we're going to be the demand for services and the need to help our community members across the country, not just Sacramento, is going to be there for quite some time. So it's wonderful that people got some stimulus money, but as you know, cost of living, all these folks that are struggling were already struggling before the pandemic.
Yep.
It just put a microscope on it. And then you think about the people that had never reached out to us before. I mean, some could argue 40% of our clientele during the pandemic had never reached out to a food program before. Just because they get a little stimulus money doesn't mean they're out of the woods. So we're just really trying to figure out, you know, what does this thing look like? And we're trying to forecast as best we can to make sure we have enough food volume and resources to help these folks.
Yeah. Stimulus money is at best a Band-Aid. It might get you from Sunday to Friday of 1 week if you're still unemployed. It isn't going to last very long, that's for sure. And in most cases, won't even pay the rent. But it does help a little bit, and hopefully will help people. But you're right. At the very peak, Blake, of demand, how much greater was the demand for your services than, say, during a quote-unquote normal time 2 or 3 or 4 years ago?
100%.
100%. Wow, 100%. Double.
Our organization, you know, the primary goal for us is to get as much food out to all the agencies that we support. We obviously have our own food programs, but I mean, our core mission is to try to help all the charities that help the folks that really need services. And we were collectively feeding about 150,000 people per month. Well, by the middle of May, we hit 300,000. So I think a small portion of that was just that the marketing, the outreach by everybody to try to inform people where they could go,
mm-hmm.
added some people to the line. But quite frankly, most of it was folks that had never reached out to us before and found themselves in this situation. And you know, I mean, I feel really honored that we were able to provide really healthy, very, very high quality food for folks. But the feedback that we're getting, quite frankly, is they're going to be in this situation for quite some time. You just don't go back to work in a $15 to $20 an hour job in Northern California where cost is high and think that, you know, you're just going to go back to normal. So, you know, kids still need cleats for sports, you know, clutches go out in cars, people get sick, people need clothes. So we're, you know, again, we're just really trying to focus on how do we best serve and provide these resources so people can get back on their feet as quickly as possible and we can open up this economy. I mean, that's going to be the biggest, you know, indicator of people being able to get back and be self-sufficient.
Yeah, and, you know, the notion of getting back on your feet is one thing, but fully recovering could well never happen for a lot of people because you get that big hole blown in the family budget. And then you go back, if you're lucky, to the same job you had at the same wage you had. Well, that may have gotten you from day to day, but you've still got that big hole where either everything went onto a credit card or who knows how you survived, but frequently went into a great debt.
Yeah, and then we have people that own businesses that got them shut down that will never open the doors again, and they're for the first time in a very dire situation where they worked their entire lives, two, three, four generations owned a small business, and they've had to shut the doors. And I mean, these are heart-wrenching stories, but I mean, the reality. I mean, and then you overlay it with the cost of living, as I've said, in Sacramento, Northern California, it's substantial. And so we, you know, again, we're really focusing on how can we ensure that we have the resources necessary for the next couple of years with the demand being this high. And again, we're kind of forecasting. That's what businesses do. We're like, okay, what does the demand look like? We feel it's going to be very high. We don't think it's going to be double. It's tapered off a little bit, but it's still very high. We're looking at 80% from pre-COVID numbers to now. We peaked at 100%. We're about 80, 85 right now. Well, in order for a nonprofit to maintain that sort of output, it's going to require a lot of resources. So that's really what we're focused on, sustainability for the organization, but quite frankly, how can we provide as much really high-quality service to folks, you know, for the future?
So did you ever have to just say, no, we're out of food?
No, we did not. We were lucky. We were, I mean, you make your own luck, but I mean, we were blessed, obviously, I think we had a lot of prayers from Bishop Soto. We had a lot of prayers from the community.
Yes.
If you look at it, I'm very proud of our staff, board. I mean, we really looked at, okay, what do we need to do right now, immediately when this thing hit? And we took a leap of faith and we bought a tremendous amount of food, just knowing we didn't know how long this would go on. And then that was a solid bridge to then the federal, state, local government started kicking in on the coronavirus relief. Obviously, we were spending a lot of money on output and operations as well, but collectively we did a very good job of shoring up our food resource volume. And then as time went on, food banks, regional food banks, you know, really started working together and kind of trying to figure this out. And you looked at communities like Sacramento across the country and what did other folks, what were they doing and trying to get help. And our donors, our wonderful donors throughout the Sacramento County did a tremendous job of stepping up and helping us. And we met the need. And right now, I can say with confidence that our food volume is very solid. Who knows if we're talking in 6 months from now what that looks like, because quite frankly, we've never seen the demand this high, and if the demand continues to be this high, we have to be very mindful of, you know, what is the resources going to take. But for now, and since COVID hit our community, we've been very blessed to have enough food volume for people.
Praise the Lord. So you emphasize and you talked about, high quality, nutritious, healthy food. At some point, when you're hungry, you're going to eat. And, you're not even, in many cases, you may be worried about it, but you say, I'm hungry, my kids are hungry, and they can't go to bed. I'm going to give them something bad rather than nothing. Do you ever have to compromise when the volume just gets so high that you go, gee, we'd like to, you know what I'm saying?
I do know what you're saying. And so for folks that are listening, I think it's important to keep this in mind. So 42% of all the food that we bring in, even during the pandemic, was fresh produce.
Wow.
Now, that has its own set of challenges. Sure. Because at the agency level, there's cold storage.
Right.
You know, the education side of people knowing what to do with some of the produce. But regardless, 42% was produce.
That's a phenomenal figure.
Phenomenal amount. So the rest of it, quite frankly, we have some control over. And the food staples, as you called it, like, and you and I could go through it, but I mean, just to give you an idea, you know, there's canned vegetables, there's nice beans and soups and canned meat and canned fruit. I mean, there's, believe it or not, there's very high quality canned food that luckily can sit on the shelf for a while.
Right.
That we were able to. I mean, I'm not exaggerating when I'm saying hundreds of semi-truck loads that we ordered and purchased for folks. So then there's some of the grocery volume that, you know, everybody has in their cupboard, unless you're a complete vegetarian, an Oreo cookie or peanut butter and jelly, and or macaroni and cheese or pasta dishes. I mean, Those are all fine, and they're staples and they're good. And so, you know, especially when you're feeding kids, I mean, my gosh, when you think about the mom and dad that worked in the service industry that had three children, that immediately schools closed their home and mom and dad isn't working, kids are hungry.
Yep.
And so, I mean, I can't tell you how much mac and cheese I ate as a kid. So, and I'm still living today, and so far I'm in pretty good health. So, you know, I think that we as food bankers, we try, one of our focuses is try to get the most highly nutritious food as possible. But we also know that the average family also eats a ton of other stuff.
Right.
That crackers or mac and cheese or chili beans. You know, and the bottom line is it's good food, and we work on that as well. So what we try to do is we have what I'd like to consider a well-balanced approach. We have a lot of fresh items. We have good quality meats. We have fruits and vegetables. And then we have what I would call a hodgepodge of stuff that we all eat that's all in our cupboards and that kids and families use all the time. So we you know, and again, we're at the whim, and we're so blessed to have so much of help from the grocery stores and the retailers and the manufacturers that, you know, all food banks deal in stuff that we would consider good, fun food that may not always have the highest nutritional value, but mixed with good other high nutritional value food, it's perfectly fine. And I would say that's probably what 8.5 out of 10 families use anyways.
Yeah, you know, I mean, when you look at peanut butter and jelly, there's a lot of fruit there. There's a lot of protein there. There's a lot of, and what kid doesn't love a peanut butter and jelly? So what adult doesn't love a peanut butter and jelly sandwich?
Yeah, I had one yesterday. So
there you go.
Full disclosure.
Yeah, I always feel like I'm cheating a little when I have it. I make sure nobody's looking, you know. But
yeah,
it's a. I don't think we have to confess it though. I'm not sure. but it's and kids have, I mean, they have to eat. I mean, it's but you know, I know with we're sheltering in place with four teenagers, and my goodness, they're eating 24 hours a day.
They eat. I remind folks all the time is that the challenges that families, young families in particular, but families that have either lost their job or they're trying to juggle jobs with having kids at home. It's just been the stress that's been on families. And then something that we had talked about last time, Bob, is there's been a tremendous uptick in our helping homebound seniors and seniors in particular. I mean, the amount of seniors that have needed our assistance has been just tremendous. So that's when you really start kicking in, okay, nutrition, kids can handle you know, a lot of this stuff. But when you think about seniors and their dietary needs and the medications they may need to take and whatnot, we're very much mindful of that as well. And we've started a couple during the pandemic. We've partnered with some tremendous people to get food to homebound seniors. So very, very proud of that.
We're talking with Blake Young, the CEO and president of the Sacramento Food Bank and Family Services. And you distribute out to, what, 200 and some other groups?
So our primary goal is to get food to about 200 agencies throughout Sacramento County. Unfortunately, a portion of them had to shut the doors during the virus, and now some of them are starting to come back because, as we roll out these vaccines and people get, the economy starts to open up, we'll have more agencies start to open. And quite frankly, we've forged new partnerships, and we're looking at other partnerships that we're working on to continue to increase access. So we had 220. About 25% or more shut their doors, some temporarily, some permanently because of the pandemic. And then we're forging new relationships and starting to bring people back as we can support them.
As a longtime wannabe farmer, I have to ask this. Are there fruits or vegetables that you would turn down just because they're just too hard to handle, they don't keep well, or what are the most difficult ones for you to deal with?
Well, I think seasonality. I mean, I think seasonal stuff like obviously stone fruits and berries are going to be very difficult. I mean, the shelf life is very short.
Yeah.
So, luckily we have a lot of agencies that we call it just in time. As soon as we receive it, we get them to the agency as quickly as possible and get into people's hands. Because if you think about it, from the time it's picked to it's on a truck to us, to finally to an agency, to the end user, I mean, there's really only a couple of days at best. So, I mean, we don't, I mean, obviously we take it, we buy some of it, but that's not where our focus is, just because it's so logistically challenging. I mean, we do give it away. We do buy some of it. The green leafies and a lot of the leafy greens that people love and their high nutritional value, they're very delicate. We got to get in people's hands.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm going to buy trucks and trucks and truckloads of produce, it's going to be your potatoes, your carrots, your onions, your apples, your oranges.
Right.
High nutrition, shelf life a little bit longer, and folks know how to use and prepare these things.
Yeah.
But then, we have 200 and... We have 240 different fruits and vegetables in California alone. So, I mean, if we have an opportunity to get kiwis and we can pass them on to folks, you know, we'll do it. But, there's just some much more delicate. So I would say you could probably pick 10 fruits and vegetables that we really focus on. And then during the season, we want to make sure we can get folks. So melons, for example, or in the wintertime, squash. There's lots of different types of squashes you can get to folks, that there's lots of ways to prepare it. The shelf life is long. Melons, there's tons of melons in California during the summer. People love them. They're a little bit tough to move, but, our philosophy is people that are in need of services, why not try to provide them the highest quality food possible?
Yeah. I remember once taking a ride with my kids when they were quite young up in the Yuba City area, and I stopped to show them a vineyard of grapes, and it was kiwi.
Yeah.
It was not grapes. It looked
You mean just the way they grow.
The way they grow, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. You're right. It's very bountiful. And I love apricots, but either they're like rocks. And you think, okay, I'll put them on the kitchen counter. And by the next morning, they're soup. It's just they go fast. They go really fast.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, for folks that struggle to put good food and resources on the table because of economics, they don't get an opportunity to eat, a lot of those. I mean, quite honestly, if you can go straight to a farm and pick or get that day's harvest, you have a little while, and they're just so wonderful. But our, you know, what we're trying to think of is what is the biggest bang for the buck? How
right.
can people, how can people utilize a lot of, you know, not fruits, but vegetables to make mm-hmm. hearty dishes? You know, we try the best we can to encourage folks to obviously shop, you know, on a budget, but really, really cook at home. And scratch cooking is a way to extend, you know, the volume of your food tremendously.
Most
and
definitely.
You know, I know that's how I grew up.
Yep. We ate a big family growing up with not much money, and we ate a lot of potatoes, you know, just an awful lot of potatoes cooked about 16 different ways and loved it, you know. And it's amazing that, you know, you look, I can remember the days where a 10-pound bag of potatoes was 99 cents or something. And that's a lot of eating for that's got to be one of the best bargains as a vegetable, I would think, is potatoes.
Well, most people listening today, you know, they scratch cook now, and they grew up scratch cooking, and,
yep.
and you know, I know there's a lot of convenience out there for fast food and whatnot, but I think most people that we run into, most people that we talk to, still, believe it or not, scratch cook. If they want their food to last, if they want to be able to feed their families three meals a day on a budget, that there's only one way to do it.
Yep.
And there are, you know, it doesn't have to be, you know, what we've tried to educate folks on is it can be very simple recipes that are delicious, and it does encourage families to be together, and there's a lot to learn there that we took for granted when we were kids because our parents just did it, and we just thought that was the way until a Burger King popped up on every corner.
Yep.
But there is value in that education. There is value in getting and cooking that food. And you know, it's a lot of people don't think that way anymore. And it's incredibly efficient and it's incredibly effective.
You've told me on several occasions that you can get five meals for a dollar.
Yeah.
Wow. That's a true dollar
yeah.
menu.
Well, I'm very proud of that, and obviously part of it is because we get food donated. Part mm-hmm. of it is that we cooperatively buy with 40 other food banks in the state of California. Part of it is that we use such a large volunteer force. But think about it. You give 10 bucks to Sacramento Food Bank and Family Services, and we can produce 50 meals. I mean, that's tremendous.
That's just unreal.
It's unreal, and you know, and you can look across the nation. Most food banks our size can't do that, and so, you know, when you think about supporting, you know, food banks, I mean, the return on your community investment is very high, and you know, it doesn't take that much money. I mean, I tell folks all the time. I mean, give $5. I mean, we can do tremendous work with it, and I think people in the community really appreciate that, and we've been able to do a lot with it. So yeah, it's something I'm very proud of.
Well, yeah, when you think about it as a donor, when you think about it, if you think, gee, I've only got $20 to spare, or $20 a week, or whatever it is, and you go, man, that's 100 meals. That's really encouraging.
Well, it is, and I think there's a misconception. A misconception that you have to give a bunch of money to donate to charity, and that's just simply not true. I will tell you that the majority of people that support our organization give $20, $30, $50 a month.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's what they do. And they're consistent. They believe in the mission. Maybe over time, as they are able to earn more, or, you know, maybe they're getting older and they're getting ready to retire, or they retire, they give a little bit more money. But we have so many wonderful people that give $20, $50, $100 a month. They're very proud to do it. You know, we communicate with them often. We're just so lucky to have that many people. But it doesn't take millions of dollars. I mean, it really doesn't. And, you know, it goes a long ways. And I can't tell you how great it is to have that sort of support.
So what can our listeners do? Can they just sit down? Can they do it online? Can they send you a check? How does that work?
You know, I tell folks two things, because obviously the backbone of our organization is also volunteering. Father Dan, you know, started a great organization 45 years ago, and still today we have so many lovely people that come in from the community on a consistent basis. We have so many companies that come in with group volunteering. I tell folks, look, get involved, come volunteer with us. If you want to donate, wonderful. I think the easiest thing to do is go online. I think now people, you know, just simply go online right. and donate through our website, sacramentofoodbank.org. But I also encourage folks to get involved. I mean, if you've never given provided a donation to us and you're on the fence, come visit us.
Mm-hmm.
Come walk in and see what we're doing. Volunteer for a day and see what we're doing. Come out to one of our distributions and see the community. But, yeah, I mean, it's super simple. I encourage people to give cash donations just because the multiplier. We really are good stewards with folks' donations. And the dollar that you give, I mean, we can produce five meals. I mean, it's as simple as that.
So for a long time, you were telling me that with especially as your senior volunteers, you weren't able to use them anymore. Has that loosened up at all?
It has, and thank God, because they're my favorite people. I mean, I know your listeners have heard me before. I was raised by my grandmother. And you know, unfortunately, she died when I was away in the military. But, I mean, I have always had an affection for folks that are, well, now I am that person. But we have so many wonderful volunteers, and they had to stay home for quite some time. And, it, you mm-hmm. know, for a lot of them, you ask them, they're like, it's killing me.
Yeah,
I want to be there helping Sacramento Food Bank. But, no, things are loosening up. We are having more and more volunteers come out. We have a lot of senior volunteers that feel comfortable now coming out. And it's not only is it a blessing, but it also just so much adds to the synergy and the dynamic to the organization. So if you're thinking about, well, maybe I got both my vaccinations and I feel pretty comfortable, please come out. We'd love to have you. We need you, and we'd love to have you.
Very good. Blake, anything I didn't ask you that you wanted to share?
Well, so ironically, you mentioned the volunteers.
Right.
So we celebrated one of my favorite volunteers a little while ago. She's 99 years old, and she still comes to the warehouse once a week.
Wow.
That is the truth. And so we had such a – now, she's slowing down. You imagine. She's slowing down. She's 99. But she's been a volunteer with us for over 30 years.
Oh, my goodness.
And, you know, it just tells you, you know, I have to believe that volunteering, not just with us, with other organizations, doing God's work is a way to stay fit and to stay sharp and to meet new people. And I just encourage folks that if they're on the fence and, oh, you know, I belong to a crochet, you know, group mm-hmm. or I do this, well, know if you want to come out and volunteer with us, we would love to have you. And then the only other thing I'd mention is, you know, I'd be remiss if I didn't thank Bishop Soto, his love and support of the organization, and the Diocese of Sacramento for all of the support they give the organization. It's just tremendous. We are, and I am very appreciative of it.
Yeah, and the thing I so love about Sacramento Food Bank and Catholic Charities and other groups is that it doesn't matter. There's no questionnaire. You don't have to be Catholic. You don't have to be Christian. You don't even have to believe in God. You know, you're going to get the same bag of groceries anybody else does.
Yeah, and one of the reasons why I came to Sacramento Food Bank as a volunteer 27 years ago, people forget that Catholic Charities is the largest provider of social services in the world. We
right.
should all be proud of that.
Right.
And we don't ask who you are. We're there to help, and we provide tremendous support, but we do that all over the world.
Yeah.
So, you know, and we're really not boasters or braggers of what we do, but it's nice sometimes to get that plug because Catholic Charities is done. I mean, if it wasn't for Catholic Charities, there'd be a lot of more hurting people in this world. I'll tell you that right now.
Well, if you have a volunteer walk in named Jesus Christ, he's got two fishes and five loaves of bread, let him in the door.
let him in the door. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I know that volunteers are just the heart and soul of your organization and so many organizations. And I'm so pleased that all those seniors have been able to come back.
Yeah. Me too. Us too.
Well, Blake, you indeed are doing the Lord's work out there in the vineyard, and greatly appreciate all you and your staff and your volunteers do, and keep the faith, and we'll look forward to our paths crossing again soon, hopefully in person one day.
You bet, Bob. Thank you, and thank you to everyone listening. We're so grateful for all the support, love and support that we get from everyone, so thank you. We'll keep trucking on and doing the Lord's work and working as hard as we can to help the community.
Amen. God bless. Thanks, Blake.
Okay. Thank you, Bob.
Greatly appreciate it. Blake Young, the CEO and president of Sacramento Food Bank and Family Services. I've always thought, Gabe, that would be what a talented guy he is, and somebody who, you know, he has found his calling in life, and the right man for the job. I've always thought what an opportunity that is for the right individual, somebody who's motivated, who thinks outside the box and really creatively, and boy, they got the right person in that job. And look at how that has expanded, and as the need almost overnight doubled, they figured out how to do it. There was never a sign up saying, well, we're sorry, we're out of food. You know, don't come back till next Tuesday. We'll see if we have anything then. This never happened. And you don't hear, I know they've been concerned. How long can we maintain this? How long can we stay with it? But as long as they have the support of you, the listeners, whether it's donations, volunteering, prayer, they're going to make it. And as long as they have Blake there, they're going to make it as well. We're going to take a quick break. Back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
Hi, I'm John McGinnis, retired sheriff of Sacramento County, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thank you, Sheriff McGinnis. I appreciate all you do and have done in the Diocese of Sacramento. So, and we're pleased to welcome in Marcy Green, the principal of St. Elizabeth Ann Seton in Elk Grove. Marcy, always good to have you on the program.
Thank you for having me. What an honor.
It's an honor for us. Thank you. I long for the day when we can see your smiling face here in person.
That would be wonderful. I miss seeing you.
Yes, it's been a long time, and I'm sure we both got younger during that time.
Oh, of course.
And It's just, and of course, we used to see you here in the diocese on a regular basis mm-hmm. because you were yes. part of the schools department, and then you went back into the classroom. Went back into the. Tell us about your elementary school.
Well, I'm very blessed to have come to Elk Grove to be the principal, because when I was at the school department, I just recognized how much after 20 years in education that I just missed being with kids. The idea of being on the campus really feeds you, and it's my own home community of Elk Grove, so it makes it extra special. But our school is thriving, and I'm thrilled because, you know, we're looking back on the last year and seeing that that we've been able to do it to the best of our abilities. Right now we've got probably at last count about 70, between 70 and 75% of our kids on campus, mm-hmm. and that includes preschool as well. Preschool was very innovative, and they kept doing an online class even for preschool, and that has helped some of the families stay in touch. And then our teachers, as we've talked about before, have been doing this, what Mr. Snyder calls dual instruction. So we've got the kids at home on a Zoom call, and the teachers are instructing them as well as instructing the kids in the classroom. And fortunately, we have a model in which we have a full-time aide in every classroom. And so it just, by the grace of God, has been the setup that we needed to make this very successful, because we stay in cohorts, meaning that the classes have to stay pure to their grade level.
Right.
Having that full-time aide allows them to be able to take the kids out for recess and lunch and still stay within their cohort. And it was a great model prior, because, you know, you keep all of the happenings of the kids and the discipline and everything all contained within the classroom, and it's just proven to be a very positive model along with this COVID model. So we're really hoping, the word that we've received is that we'll be going back to full in-class instruction in August. But that remains to be seen, because we don't know, you know, we thought we had a lot of ideas about things last year at this time.
Yes, we did,
which
yeah.
changed somewhat. But we had a meeting today of our middle school teachers, and we're just starting to plan for next year. And I think it's a good feeling for us, because it helps us to feel like we're coming out of this and kind of seeing, not necessarily the light at the end of the tunnel. We've been talking at the parish level that things are going to be different. They're either going to be, we have Father Michael Vaughn now as our pastor,
mm-hmm.
and he was reading the teachings of the Pope and him talking about how coming out of this, we're either going to be better or we're going to be worse, but it's not going to be the same. And so we're shooting for better.
a good goal. So,
yes.
I mean, I think the Catholic schools in this area have become sort of the model for a number of the public schools that are just now starting to go back.
It's amazing. Our school district is coming back and saying that next year going forward, at least from what I understand, that they're going to look like what we look like this year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's encouraging. I have a good friend of mine who is a public school principal, and he works in the neighboring public school to our Catholic school,
mm-hmm.
and so it's nice to have that connection. But we've talked multiple times on the phone, and I've said, you know, hey, if you guys want to come and see what we're doing, we're happy to show you how it works, you know. So one of the things we've been able to take advantage of is the CARES money that the district has provided for us, and so we're just trying to lay out what we might need to continue. I don't want anything to feel like, you know, we're just kind of willy-nilly going back to the way things were, because we won't 100%. We're going to keep all the hygiene practices mm-hmm. in place. The last we talked about, that the kids will probably in some capacity may need to still wear masks, because we'll probably stay in that cohort model.
Right.
We ordered extra. We have outdoor sinks so that the kids can wash their hands before coming in and, mm-hmm. you know, when they need to. And so we ordered a whole nother set, so each class will have two on the outside, because we're anticipating having so many more kids back on campus. And so being able to kind of foresee what are those things that we know we're going to need a few more plexiglass shields so that when we put the kids in tables, if they feel like they need to have that buffer between them, we can still utilize table groups, or kids could, you know, sit face-to-face and have those conversations, whereas right now it looks like the old school Catholic schools, everybody's in rows and they're all spaced out, but we would love to get our kids back to where they're looking face-to-face and being able to dialogue about what their learning is, because there's so much richness in the learning when the kids can talk and discuss about the things that they're learning and share. So
I think I used
when they're doing that now, it's just different.
I think I used to see that on my report card when I was in elementary school. Bobby seems spaced out.
Well, it's funny because I tell my, you know, we went through that whole idea of, or maybe it's just new teachers who feel like, you know, when the principal walks in, everything should be quiet. And
I think.
Oh, that tells me nothing's going on. If the kids are talking and I can, you know, go up and have a conversation with them about what they're learning, that's what we want to see.
So, The 25 to 30% that are staying, you know, are home and are distance learning, I'm sure they all have very good reasons.
It's such a wide variety of reasons. Some of them have become convenient because if the parents are working from home, it's much easier for them to stay home so that they don't have that commute to school, so that they could, you know, work their hours that they need to, all the way to, you know, I've talked to parents whose kids have asthma and they're still really concerned about the exposure and not knowing. And so, you know, there's a wide variety of reasons, and we're not asking questions. We're just providing them the education they need. And I'm very excited that we've continued to do our diagnostic checkpoints and testing with the kids along the way. And the kids are making progress and, you know, they're learning like they should be. And that is our number one goal. So
are,
they're not losing anything.
The group that's staying home, are most of those reasons going to go away by August? In other words, are most of them going to be able to come back?
It's funny that you ask. I do a community coffee, and it's via Zoom now, and I've been doing that once a month. And I had one this morning, and the four moms that had joined me for that had questions were all moms that were had kids that were at home. And so we discussed that, you know, what's it going to take? And I think really it's going to be a slow process for making them feel comfortable. But what we have done and what has proven to be successful so far is when we do the diocese takes part in what's called STAR testing that we do every four times a year. And that's our checkpoints for the kids. And so instead of telling the kids, you know, log on and do it at home, we've invited them into school, and we made it an environment where they felt safe coming back, doing it either, you know, in small groups or with their class, and checking them in and doing their temperatures and all that. And by them coming on campus and seeing what's going on, I think it's reduced some of that fear for those kids. Some of them, I've even given them tours and had them get a chance to go see their class and look in the window or talk to the kids and just see that it's not as scary as they think it might be. But that's really, you know, it has to do with the feelings of the family and what they had going on. Now, a lot of them at first were the community that we live in. It's very much a three-generation community where grandparents really take a big part in what the kids are doing, and a lot of grandparents carpool, you know, do the carpool for the kids, or they go and stay with the grandparents after school. So a big part of it at first was that exposure to the grandparents, and now that they've been able to be vaccinated, that has alleviated some of that.
Yeah, for sure. And
then, of course, we have a large population of parents who are in, who are nurses, and or in the medical profession, and so I think a lot of it for them was protecting other people from what they might be exposed to. So
what have been the biggest hurdles, the biggest difficulties?
Gosh, that's the part we try not to dwell on, you know.
Yeah.
I think the biggest hurdles at first were I look back and I'm so thankful to our teaching staff, because there was never a question that they weren't going to do this. It was just, they were right on board the whole time. So that in itself was the hurdle that we didn't even have to, you know, it flattened that out. But I think it's more of the what's tomorrow going to bring or what might change and, you know, trying to make those adjustments and then communicate why and how. You know, even something as simple as, you know, I've never been a one-to-one device, you know, even though that's in the education field for years, it was, you know, the kids need that device in their hand and they need their own device. And I think I don't think it's necessary. And so it wasn't a big expense that we had.
Mm-hmm.
And so we would utilize a cart of, we actually had about three carts that would go from room to room as teachers needed them and use class sets. Well, with COVID, you know, you can't share computers, you can't. So it was really last year about this time realizing, oh my goodness, we really do need one-to-one because for certain classes and for kids to communicate with the kids at home, there's times when they need to be on the device. So if they're working on a group project and we want to incorporate kids who are at school and at home so they can work together, they have to have access to a computer. Even if not all of them are using it, they have to have their own device.
Mm-hmm.
And then for our middle school, we have electives which are multi-grade, and because we're in that cohort model, it was figuring out, okay, how do we still do electives and not combine the kids? And so our middle school kids, when they do electives, have to be online, and then their teachers are online with them. And so getting those devices in place, in time, figuring out, you know, how we manage that expense, because it's a big expense when you're talking about having a device for every student. But, you know, and it was communicating, why do we need to do this, and, you know, where does this cost come from? And I think it's finally worked itself out as people, because if you're not, as parents of kids who are not on campus, they don't recognize what the need might be. So it's just kind of those things that if you're not in it, understanding why and communicating that out or being ahead of communicating out why things need to change and really, like I said, being ahead of everything. A lot of it is taking time to just plan it out. And we've had just some amazing, not only amazing staff, but amazing parents who have been willing to kind of take the time and figure out how do we make this work as close to tradition as possible or as close to giving the kids the experience as possible. Our school goes to Sutter's Fort, and the kids are docents, and they get to spend the night, and they haven't been able to do that the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, having those online field trip experiences, they're not exactly the same, but not giving up on it. And we're having that same class. They're doing their play outside in a picnic setting so that the parents can still see it, but that they can still do the play. So, you know, just finding ways to do things. And I would say that this year, the thing that has been the least obstacle is what we figured would be the most would be like rainy day pickup, where you can't have, you know, usually the parents come in and they pick the kids up with umbrellas and bring them out. And, you know, we can't have parents on campus. And so, you know, by God's grace, we've had so few rainy days. I know we need the rain, but even when I'm not kidding. When we had a rainy day and we would be watching it all day, what's pickup going to look like? What's pickup going to look like? And you could look at Doppler and you could see the clouds parting over our school. I'm not kidding you I know it was God's hand. Just, you know what? I'm going to make this really easy on you guys. I'm going to, you know, the rain's going to go around you. And all but one day.
That's amazing.
It was amazing.
Did Doppler show angels and things?
You know, it wasn't angels, but you could see the clouds parting around the area of the school. It was amazing. And that is my testimony to all this, is that you could just see God's hand in everything that we were doing. And when we look back, it's really kind of given us the motivation to know we did the right thing.
But isn't it the most comforting feeling when you actually sense God's hand in something?
This year, it has, this has been it. And if, you know, if you didn't live by, you know, Jesus, I trust in you, we do now. I mean, that's just, it's kind of our mantra. You just know you've got to give it up to God's plan. And it just takes so much of the stress out of it, you know?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. You know, I look at your teachers too, and I just, I mean, I see them doing double duty every day. It's just, it's nothing short of heroic.
It really is, because when you think about the fact that they, you know, I think more than anything, it is, they are committed to mission. And we knew that from, you know, we've known that already, but we knew that from day one with all of this. You know, how can we do this? How can we do it better? How can we make it work? And then, you know, you hear stories. We already know that our teachers are not paid as much as, you know, what they could be paid if they were working in the public school system. You know, and I have to also say that, you know, we also have a different set of kids. So, you know, that makes it nice. We have a full-time aide. But they're still doing the work. And it's hard to, you know, it's not hard to hear. I shouldn't even say that. They're easily motivated because we just kind of keep each other up. And every day are there. And, you know, we've been able to fill in for each other. We've had the same staff of 40 for the entire year that have filled every gap that we've needed.
I think you put it perfectly, Marcy, when you said they're mission oriented. You know, they believe in the mission, and well, here comes a roadblock. I'm not going to go home and cry. I'm part of this mission, and we're going to solve it.
Well, and it's like a good marriage. You know, when you've got one that's down, you've got somebody else to pick them up, and, you know, and it's just this constant, you know, we've all had our bad days, but you know, we don't typically have them at the same time. And even down to when we were all vaccinated, and a majority of us were vaccinated on the same day, and we were thinking, oh, my gosh, what's going to happen? Mm-hmm. You know, it was on a Sunday, and then, you know, what are we going to do on Monday? And everybody just, you know, picked up their bootstraps, and, you know, there was, you know, a couple here and there that were really struggling for other reasons, you know, with other, you know, pre-existing conditions that made the effects of the shot. But, you know, no problem. We're there. We're gonna pick it up, and we're going to make this work. And, you know, people doing things that they wouldn't normally do, you know, as far as teaching things, you know, okay, I'll make it work. I'll figure it out. I know how to help. And and then even with having the preschool, just being able to, our preschool director is amazing. Their staff is amazing. And so just being able to help each other through all these things, it's been wonderful. So it's been, you know, I think it's that whole idea that, you know, we struggle so much when they're suffering and when things are hard. But when you come out of it, you recognize, wow, look at how much I've gained. And I always say that to, you know, even my own daughter. I was, over the last couple of weeks, I was with her. She just had her second baby. And, you know, you want to push limits, even for the little kids, you know, for them to try new things, because that's what builds their confidence. And so I think it's the same with us. You know, you push your limits, you recognize that you can do something that you didn't think you could do, and then you have the energy to do more and the confidence to do more.
You know, I've said many times the best things that happened to me, that ultimately were the best things for me in life, I was carried kicking and screaming into them, you know. Mm-hmm. And then you look back and you go, I'm really glad I went through that.
Right, right.
You know, like, thank you, Lord. I wasn't thanking you at the time, Lord, but
exactly.
I'm thanking you now.
But I think it's really nice that, you know, we didn't go through it together. I mean, we didn't go through it on our own. We went through it together, because not only did the staff have each other, but I had some amazing principals that in my cluster of schools that are right in the area that we would meet at least once a week, face to face, and talk about the things that we were struggling through, and help each other with them. You know, hey, can you do this, or can't you do this, or how are you doing this? And so just having that network was wonderful. And then, of course, you know, everything that the school department does for us to help kind of just pave the way. So,
well, Marcy, it's such a joy to talk with you, and I know
Thank you. All
those kids are in such great hands down there, and our prayers go with you, and I'll look forward to the day when our paths can cross in person.
That would be wonderful. Are you at the pastoral center?
Yes,
if I get down there, I'll knock on your door.
That would be great. We've managed to broadcast from here all through the pandemic, and it was lonely for a long time. There's a few people in the building now, but starting to come back. But, yeah, we'd love to see you.
Yeah, I listen to Catholic radio, and I hear, you know, everybody's doing it from their homes, and, you know, it's funny, I guess, what people have set up, but it's good that you're it. I love that little studio. So
yes.
I will look forward to the day that we can meet again in person. But I'm vaccinated, so, you know.
Yeah, I'm vaccinated
I'm
too, so, you know.
Well, there you go.
we'll do it sooner rather than later.
Sounds great. Well, always lovely to talk to you, and your prayers are felt, and we really appreciate them. So
great. Well, God bless Marcy, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Have a wonderful day.
You too. Thanks Bye-bye. So much. That's Marcy Green, the principal at St. Elizabeth Ann Seton School in Elk Grove. Just talking to her, Gabe, doesn't it make you want to have your kids go to her school? It's every time I talk to one of our principals or teachers from our Catholic schools, I go, wow, those kids are really, really blessed. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening. God bless. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and the care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love. Just as many people in our community need a hand, countless others are reaching out to them with comfort and hope. You can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation. You can give them a call, 916-851-2700. That's 916-851-2700. And you can be confident that fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Ministry of Mercy Ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts has been for all of us here in the diocese as they transition into new ownership and management. They continue to offer wonderful workshops, wonderful resources for the Catholic community throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. They're located at 6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Give them a call, 916-338-7272. We also receive a generous underwriting support by Crumley & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. If you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help you with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to get you where you want to go. You can contact them, get all the details at Crumley & Associates, 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks. They're at 916-638-4600. That's 916-638-4600. And we are certainly appreciative of the fine and longstanding support of the Mercy Foundation, of Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts, and of Crumley and Associates.
I feel burning deep inside of me. I feel your spirit is moving.